Hi, I'm Matt Sorensen, CMO at Clearbit.
And I'm Alex McCaw, CEO of Clearbit.
And you're listening to the Manager's Handbook Podcast.
Here at Clearbit, we've been writing a book on management as part of our internal training program with a goal of developing world-class managers.
The handbook brings together what's worked for us over the past 5 years and everything we've learned from our failures.
Each month, we'll be releasing a new episode of the pod along with a written chapter of the handbook. You can find this all at themanagershandbook.com.
You're listening to the Manager's Handbook Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Sorensen, and joining me today, as always, is one of San Francisco's top five office DJs and Clearbit CEO, Alex McCaw.
Great to be here, Matt.
In today's podcast, we're going to cover chapter 6 of the handbook, all about information sharing. We're going to dive into internal communications, transparency, documentation, AORs, areas of responsibility. And information sharing and internal communication, I've noticed, gets incrementally harder with every new person. Alex, what have been some of the hardest things about scaling our own internal comms?
Well, it really comes down to the right information on the right channel to the right people. And the way that we scaled things initially was that we were like the fire hose. Everyone gets the fire hose. And that worked up to maybe 25, 30 people, if it really worked up to that. And then after that, it was overwhelming. You know, not everyone likes receiving the fire hose. Not everyone has time for it. And you need to be a bit more selective about your communication.
Yeah, and the fire hose in this example means we were copying everyone on every email, so every person at the company could see all external emails. And also Slack was the primary place for information sharing and for information broadcast.
And so there's a few factors you got to consider when thinking through your internal comms. And as Matt was alluding to, internal comms just gets trickier and trickier the bigger the company. It correlates negatively with company size. So some of the factors you need to consider are the relative priority of pieces of information and who needs to know what when. Synchronous versus asynchronous nature. Email's asynchronous and Slack is synchronous. And then the efficiency of the human brain processing different types of communication. Some people can, we can all read faster than we can talk. If something is really dense, it should probably be communicated over text rather than verbally. And then the purpose of the communication. So knowledge transfer or behavior change. Like I was alluding to the last one, if you're trying to transfer a lot of knowledge, then you probably want to have it in text, but it can be not super exciting, let's put it that way, to have a massive speech that you have to read in text. So if something's going to be rah-rah and influence behavior change, then it should probably be speech. So you've got to consider that when you're communicating. And then lastly, you've got to consider the remote nature of the company. And when I wrote this, we were 40% remote, and now Clearbit is obviously 100% remote. So you need to consider that aspect.
Yeah, I think when we had an office, remote was an interesting layer where a lot of this communication needed to happen either in multiple places because it was happening in person as well as digitally, or it just needed to be very, very thoughtfully communicated to both.
So the medium is super important to consider, and priority comes into the medium. So the mistakes I often see are when people think messages are more important than they actually are. And this just grinds the whole system to a halt. If you're using synchronous communication like chat or Slack versus an asynchronous communication like email, if you think you're whatever you're working on is super high priority, then you'll default to synchronous communication and then you'll interrupt someone else's work and make the whole system inefficient. So you've got to have a really good idea of the priority of the message.
Yeah, I think that's really important because so much of the message of communication can be distracting. Some of our jobs and some of our roles require a ton of communication, right? Sales, CS. And then there's other parts that require that like deep thought, that uninterrupted thinking time, engineering, product, project-based work. So what do you recommend for different teams or companies as they grow for some some etiquette around communications?
We actually have a table in the manager's handbook that you can check out that has the different communication types and the medium that we recommend for that communication. So if something is incredibly urgent, like the servers are down, then we say use Slack and then give someone a call. Otherwise, mostly, if it's something's a big topic or you're asking someone to do something, email actually is much better than Slack. Email is something that we've been using for many, many years, and it works. It's maybe not as sexy as Slack, but it's got a built-in task management system, like a built-in prioritization system. Whereas with Slack, we find that you might ask someone to do something, and that message would then just get lost.
So we've talked about the internal comms. How does this apply to all of our customer-facing or external communications?
So last year, we started using a product called Chorus, and there are a few competitors in this category, but essentially, Chorus just records all of your calls and transcribes them. It's something that you absolutely need to be using one of these tools. We actually record every external call, and then we use that for training purposes. Then we started recording all the internal calls as well, either using Chorus or using Zoom's built-in functionality. And then once you got that recording, you can just stick it in Notion, and so people can see and rewatch the meeting if they want to.
Last thing I want to touch on before we jump off of internal comms is our rules for Slack communication, because we have some very distinct, very opinionated rules around how to use Slack.
Yeah, so we are trying to avoid private messaging people if possible and ask questions in a public channel so that others can learn from the answer. Every day, hundreds, if not thousands of times during every single day, someone at Clearbit thinks to themselves, I have a question. And what do they do when they think that? Well, generally speaking, they jump into Slack and they ask it in the group channel of Slack of the relevant team. And so what we ask people to do is first check the wiki, see if your question is answered there. If it's not, then you can ask in Slack. Try not to PM someone because it kind of blocks their work, but just ask in a group channel. And then once you get the answer to your question, then record it back in the wiki so that you can avoid that loop in the future.
And so communication is often thought of as part of our next topic here, which is transparency. And I think transparency has changed a lot. It's become a very popular word to talk about in San Francisco Bay Area companies. Why do you think transparency has become such a big topic over the last decade or so?
I think it's the move to creative workers. So let's just say you run an assembly line in a factory. There's no real need for transparency. Your workers need to know exactly what the information that they need to do their job, right? Whatever's right in front of them. So transparency is not super useful. But in a tech startup, it's a lot more useful because you've hired a lot of very smart people who can solve the company's biggest problems. But they can't solve those problems if they don't know what those problems are. So transparency really helps shine light on whatever the biggest problems the company is facing.
Yeah, I think there's three really kind of key things, right? Like transparency increases our potential creativity. The more information that people have, the more context they have, the more understanding they have of why we're doing the things we do, the more likely they are to be able to creatively solve that problem. It builds trust. So transparency gives people a sense of certainty. They know why we're doing the things we do. And it also means we don't have to manage the state of who knows what. If by default, we assume that everyone knows everything, we don't have to play the information games that many companies kind of fall into.
And one of the mistakes we made with transparency, and we alluded to this a little earlier, is with the fire hose. So we made everything transparent, but we also took all that information, gave that to people all the time. And so transparency doesn't mean giving all the information to all the people all the time. It just means that the information is there if they need it.
Absolutely. What are some of the ways that we practice transparency? And like, what are some of the things that we share that are super high leverage?
I think one of the most transparent things we do is we publish the notes from the leadership offsite. So this is the retrospective of the quarter, 360 feedback, and a breakdown of how we're feeling emotionally. And really, the only thing that we redact from this is anything related to performance or compensation. But it's a really raw document that we share with the whole company.
Yeah, in general, we're willing to talk about just about anything except for performance and compensation in a public forum.
Right. Some of the other ways that we are transparent, we're transparent with all our metrics, ARR, our high-level P&L, the cash in the bank, the progress, with transparency about our funding, our valuations, 409A, that kind of thing. And then meeting transparency, every meeting is recorded in Chorus, and stuck in the wiki so that if people didn't attend it, they can still watch it.
So apart from transparency, another kind of core tenet of internal communication is helping people be able to find their own answers. So that would be, you know, our documentation. How has our documentation process evolved over the years?
Well, the key thing is to have a global company wiki. And we've tried out various wikis. We ended up using Notion, and that has really served us well over the years. And now we have someone dedicated to that wiki. They're the owner of the wiki, and they make sure it's well organized.
And this may seem obvious, but why is it so important to have this?
It goes back into that thing I was talking about earlier with the I have a question process. If you don't have a good wiki, then no one can self-serve answers to their own questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Or like our bus rate gets way too high. If everything has to be answered by the person that answered it last or the person that knows it best, it's almost impossible to scale.
Yeah, you need to get that information out of people's heads and onto paper, or in this case, onto some AWS server.
Another thing that's super important to document and that we've spent a lot of time on is documenting who owns what. So what are people's, you know, AORs, areas of responsibility?
Right. And so the tragedy of the commons is when several people share responsibility for an action. And that often means that it doesn't get done well or done at all. And AORs are meant to prevent this, areas of responsibility. As a geek, I like thinking of this as the routing table for your company. So an inbound request comes in. It might be like, who's in charge of this particular area, or I have a specific question about this particular area of the company. You go to the AORs, and then you can figure out who's in charge and who you should be talking to.
Right. It also means that there's like no single point of failure. You have who is the primary owner, who's the fallback owner, who's the fallback owner after that. So if something breaks or you need the answer to someone, you have clear triage of here's who I go to first. You know, if they're offline or not available, who do I go to second?
Right. And an AOR might be running the all hands, so that I would be the person responsible for that. It might be making sure that we get an updated P&L every month, and our head of finance would be responsible for that. Every single process in the company has a owner. And another thing we do is we actually document how to do that process as well. And again, this is all in our wiki, and we have a big table in our wiki with a list of every single process in the company and the corresponding documentation. And that means that if someone leaves the company or goes on vacation, that you still know how something can get done.
So for things like AORs, there's going to be natural drift. More people join the company, things change and things get out of date. And that's natural and that's okay. The key thing is to have a regular update cadence and to have someone that owns not just your wiki, but also this AOR doc to point out when things are out of date or someone that owns something is actually no longer at the company.
Exactly.
So let's take a deep dive into the wiki itself. We'll have some screenshots for you guys in the book itself. Alex, just kind of take us through the wiki, how it works, what's in there.
The first thing is there's a kind of meta part to the wiki. So when you open up our wiki, the first thing you see is like how Clearbit uses the wiki. And that gives you an indication of how to use it. So every department has their own areas of the wiki. And I'm going to dive into how those are structured. But first, I want to talk about the overarching pages around the company, like the employment benefits. I think it's really important to have a company hierarchy in the wiki so everyone can see who reports to who. We have our processes and our AORs, and we have information about the offices and things. We also have a lot of information about the history of Clearbit. And when people are onboarding, they get a list of Asana tasks, and each of these Asana tasks is a link to a page in our wiki. And these pages are internal memos that I've written that detail the history of the company and how we've got to where we are now. And so hopefully by the time someone's fully onboarded, they'll have a good indication of why we've made some of the major decisions that we've made today. And let's dive down into each of the department's pages. And so the department is responsible for writing this. And then we have someone on our ops team who's responsible for the overall wiki and is usually the person who gives the department the nudge when certain parts of it need to be improved. And a department might be, for example, the growth department, which Matt runs. And I think actually Matt pioneered this structure for the wiki. But generally, we have pages that are external to the team. They're still internal to the company, but they're external to the team. These are like how to work with the team, how to get your questions answered, who does what, a little team history there. And then you'll have internal pages to the team, and these are for people who are on the team. And generally, it's specific resources that that team needs. On the product team, it might be like a list of all the PRDs. On the engineering team, it might be a list of all the RFCs, all the onboarding documents, all the setup guides, all that stuff that's internal to the team. So we actually separate out what's internal to that team and what's externally facing to the rest of the company.
I actually want to give Alex a bit of a shout out here. He's been kind of the driver in wikis and documentation here at Clearbit, much more so than I have ever been, to the point where we actually share out kind of screenshots of this wiki pretty regularly with other companies or people figuring out their own internal documentation. Notion has made Alex a case study. It's actually a pretty impressive example of an internal wiki.
Thank you, Matt.
So Alex, as very much the driver of keeping our wiki excellent, what are some learnings for you as the CEO here of what to do and what not to do to make sure that our wiki is great?
Well, I'm not sure if I completely recommend this, but I initially put together a page of every department's name and my own made up, not really quantifiable score of how well that department was doing, and try and shame them into improving.
Public shaming. So good.
That didn't work. Yeah. Funnily enough. So it really started improving when we assigned someone from the ops team to essentially manage the wiki, organize it, keep it up to date, and ping each department when things needed to improve. This is this constant thing that you have to be constantly committing to, and it takes time and work.
Yeah, I think the real thing here is people need to get value out of the wiki in order to give value back to the wiki. And I think that was something we ran into early on. We had a few teams that didn't have much here and weren't finding information here, and they were much less likely to create or update their department's wiki pages. And I think that's the key thing to think about, is like, this has to be the place where people get valuable information in order for them to know that this is where they should put their valuable information. We've made it. This was a very quick one. That's episode 6 wrapped. Tune in next month for the next episode and chapter of the Manager's Handbook and podcast. Next month, we'll be looking at conflict resolution and sharing some real life examples of when Alex and I have solved some of our own conflicts. This podcast, as always, is being recorded at Studio Pod SF. For more information, go to studiopodsf.com. Thank you for listening.